Welcome to the International Broadcast Ministry of Touching Lives with Dr. James Merritt. Here at Touching Lives, our mission is to touch the lives of the lost and enrich the faith of the found. And now, here is pastor, author, and speaker, Dr. James Merritt.
We are undoubtedly living in a divisive and contentious political moment. One of the most common questions our viewers have asked is this: what does it mean to be a faithful Christian in a moment like this? To help you answer this question, I've composed a Bible-based resource called Finding Peace in the Political Storm, Five Biblical Anchors for American Christians, which will help you navigate these difficult days with both grace and truth. You can read this booklet as part of your morning quiet time, or you can study it alongside your church small group. It is designed to give you clarity and courage for the days ahead. It is available to you for a gift of any amount at touchinglives.org. That's touchinglives.org. But for now, let's open up our Bibles as we explore today's message from the Word of God. Let me begin by asking you a question. Did you know that the first crime ever recorded in human history is actually in the Bible? That's true. And it was not a minor misdemeanor. It is the most serious of all crimes. As a matter of fact, there are 41 federal crimes that you can commit. And of those 41 federal crimes, they result in the death penalty. And all but two of those involve this one crime, murder. Of the 41 federal crimes, 39 of them relate some way to murder. Now, I think I speak for all of us when I would say that we certainly believe that's probably no more serious crime than that. And I think that we would all agree that someone commits that crime, at the very least, should go to jail. Some should go to jail probably without the possibility of parole. And then there would be some of us that would say, yeah, they probably even deserve the death penalty. But here's the kicker. Even though none of us are perfect, we've all done things wrong, I guarantee you everybody in this room, and every one of you listening to me right now, either online or by television, you went to bed exactly the same way I went to bed last night, and you slept pretty much the same way that I slept last night. And here's what I mean. I didn't go to bed last night worried that I had murdered anybody. I didn't go to bed worried that there'd be a knock on my door and a sheriff or a marshal or a police officer would be there. I didn't worry that there was a warrant out for my arrest for murdering someone. I didn't worry that I was on the top 10 most wanted list of the FBI. Because I went to bed last night believing, as most of you believe, that I've done a lot of things that I'm glad you don't know that I've done, and I hope you never find out. But one thing I've never done, you've never done, you've never murdered anybody. Well, as Lee Corso loves to say, not so fast, my friend. Because if what we're about to hear this morning that Jesus said is true, I'm looking at a bunch of murderers. And you're listening to one. If what Jesus said is true. So we're in a series on the Sermon on the Mount that we're calling Get Used to Different. And certainly what Jesus is going to say about murder is radically different from what you and I think about when it comes to murder. And for those of you who bring your little booklet that we gave you several months ago, we're on page 26. If you want to go there and you want to take some notes, let me tell you what we're about to do over the next several months. This is going to really get good. Up until now in the sermon that we've been studying, Jesus has been very general. He's not really getting into real many specifics. So like the Beatitudes, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, kind of a real general overlook at what the Christian life is all about. But now beginning in chapter 5 of Matthew, verse 21, Jesus is now going to get down and dirty. He's going to get into the weeds. He's going to get very specific with what we deal with Monday through Friday. He's going to talk about murder. He's going to talk about adultery. He's going to talk about divorce. He's going to talk about bitterness. He's going to talk about revenge. He's going to talk about loving your enemies. And what you're about to learn, and you're going to learn over the next several weeks, is Jesus is going to change our whole thinking about what it is to be right. and what it is to be righteous. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Jesus is going to teach us that when God looks at us and determines whether or not we're really righteous, He doesn't look at the way we are on the outside. He looks at what we are on the inside. Because see, we've got a difference with God. We judge other people by the cover. God judges people by the book. We judge people by what they do on the outside. God judges us by what we are on the inside. So you're going to hear a phrase about six times over the next several weeks, and Jesus is going to introduce His thinking on a subject. And here's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear two phrases. One phrase you're going to hear is this. You have heard that it was said. Six times Jesus is going to introduce the subject, and He's going to say, now you've heard it was said. I know what your mom and dad taught you. I know what you learned in school. I know what you've always thought is correct. I know what's always been in your mind. You have heard that it was said, but then He follows up every time with these three words. But I say. And Jesus is letting us know up front, what I'm going to tell you is so different than the message that you're used to. It's so different from what you've been taught. It is so unlike what you've always heard. And what Jesus is about to do 2,000 years ago to these Pharisees and these Sadducees and these church-going people, He's about to turn their apple cart upside down. He's about to share with them things that they never thought they would hear. So let me give you a modern-day illustration of what I'm talking about. I don't know much about computer science, but I know a little bit. Some of you will realize this. When you get a computer or even a cell phone, that comes with what's called default settings. In other words, when they built that phone, they built that computer, they put some default settings. That's automatically assigned to whatever software you've got, and those settings are called presets. You didn't ask for those to be put in there. They just put them in there. And there are operating instructions that we return to. If everything else fails, they'll say, have you tried a hard reset? Meaning, go back to the default. Go back to what was in there to begin with. Now, what you may not realize is, from the time you were born and I was born, we've all downloaded default settings and didn't even know it. These settings are written into us by the homes we were raised in, by the things we were taught, by the movies and the television shows that we watched, by the social media videos that we experience, by the books that we've read, by the people that we've met. And these default settings tend to dictate the way we interact with everybody else. Let me give you an example of a default setting you and I were all born with, every one of us. Take 2 5-year-old kids, and they're in a room, and they're playing. For whatever the reason, 1 5-year-old hits the other 5-year-old, all right? What does the other 5-year-old just naturally do? Somebody tell me. Hit him back. Well, who taught them that? Nobody. You were born with that default setting, right? We were all born. You hit me, I hit you back. And then Jesus comes along and says, no. If somebody hits you on the cheek, you turn the other. Changes the default setting. I know that's the default setting you had, but I want to change the setting. I want to change you and how you think about what's right. I want you to change in what you think is being right. I want you to think about what really is doing right. Now, let me just say before I move any further, Jesus is not contradicting the Old Testament law. When He says, you've heard it said, He's always going back to something in the Old Testament. He's not contradicting that. He's not even criticizing that. What He is doing is, I want to correct the way it's been mishandled. I want to correct the way it's been mistaught. I want to correct the way it's been misunderstood. So He said, let's just deal with one thing right up front. Let's deal with murder. Let's just talk about murder. Now, let me just be frank, be upfront. Murder is not the first sin committed in the Bible. The first sin committed was disobeying God's law. But the first fruit of that sin resulted in the first crime, which was when Cain killed his brother Abel. So he disobeyed God because he should have loved his brother like he should have loved him, but instead he didn't. And guess what? We're still reaping the bitter fruit of that thinking today. You may not know this. You may be interested to know. There are 26,000 murders in America every year. Every single day in God blessed America, 70 people are murdered. They're not accidentally shot. They're not killed in an automobile accident. They don't have heart attacks. They don't die of cancer. Every single day, somewhere in this country today, 70 people would be murdered. We are the murder capital of the world. But if you walked into this building today and we had our ushers outside the door, if anybody had said to you when you walked in, if they just said to you one question, you ever murdered anybody? First of all, you've been shocked. And secondly, you've been insulted. Do I look like a murderer? Well, yes, some of you do sometimes, to be honest with you. But you say, I've never murdered anybody. What do you even ask me that question for? You said, absolutely not, until you listen to what Jesus said about murder. Because Jesus said, you ready for this? Buckle your seatbelt. He said, murder is not just an act. Murder is an attitude. As a matter of fact, this is what Jesus is going to teach us today. Murder with the hands always comes from murder in the heart. So I want you to listen to what Jesus says about murder, because you're going to see it in a totally different light, and you're going to understand why I can look at you and say, I'm looking at a bunch of murderers and you're listening to one. So he says three things. First of all, Jesus says we must internally see the cause of the problem. That's the first thing we got to understand. You've got to internally see the cause of the problem. Now, Jesus begins by making a statement everybody in that crowd would agree with. You're going to agree with what he said. Here's what Jesus said. You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. We know where that came from. That came from one of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Now, what Jesus said, we would all agree with, okay? Murder's terrible. Murder is wrong. Murder is something nobody should ever do. It's a terrible crime. Nobody should ever unlawfully take an innocent human life. And Jesus was not denying that. He says, look, I agree with you. But then he's about to shock everybody in the crowd, and especially these self-righteous Pharisees, by telling them, but wait a minute. You can be a murderer in your heart without ever becoming a murderer in your hands. So listen to what he says. But I tell you, boy, everybody's ears perking up, but I tell you, anyone who's angry with a brother or a sister. Now, you don't need to answer this question. I know the answer. You ever been angry with anybody ever? Yeah. He said, well, okay. Anyone who's angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. And again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, we'll talk about that in a minute, is answerable to the court. And anyone says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Now, you talk about different. Jesus says, wait a minute, there's more to murder than just taking someone's life. Jesus said, for example, let me give you an example. Don't answer this question either. I know the answer. Have you ever been so angry that just maybe in a split second you wanted to kill somebody? I'll tell you this. If you drive to downtown Atlanta to work every week, give a driver enough time, you're going to want to kill somebody. Promise you. Have you been so angry, say, man, it's a good thing I don't have a gun in my hand. Or think about this. Maybe you plan a murder. Maybe you think about somebody you want to murder. And maybe you even get a sheet of paper and you write out exactly how you want to murder that person. And you even devise a way that you think you can get away with it. But let's say at the last moment you change your mind and you're not going to murder that person. All right, now watch this. At that moment, you are not guilty of the crime of murder legally. Nobody can arrest you. Nobody can take you to court. You've not broken any law legally. But Jesus said you're guilty of the sin of murder spiritually. Just because you didn't pull the trigger does not mitigate the fact you had the attitude of a murderer. Now, let me just clarify something. At that moment, you have not committed a crime, but you have committed a sin. And oh, by the way, not every sin is a crime. If you're angry enough to kill somebody, but you don't do it, it's a sin, not a crime. On the other hand, not every crime is a sin. If you were living in Nazi Germany back in the 40s, and you were a German, and you were hiding a Jewish family because you did not want them killed in the Holocaust, you would be breaking German law. You would be guilty of a crime. You would not be guilty of a sin. So not every sin is a crime, and not every crime is a sin. So, but Jesus is going to show us, you may never be convicted of the crime of murder, but all of us can be convicted at some time or another of the sin of murder. So let me just give you the kind of anger that can make a murderer out of you. For example, Jesus said, intense anger makes you a murderer. He says, but I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or a sister will be subject to judgment. Now, the word for anger there, he's not talking about just a flash of anger that you just, you know, momentary and you get over it. He's talking about that explosion. I mean, when the teeth are gritting and the jaw is clenching and the eyes are flashing. I mean, you're angry enough, it's just a good thing you don't have a gun in your hand. We've been there. And the thing is, Jesus said, well, you may not have the gun in your hand, but you've got the gun in your heart. And you have a murderous spirit. I love the story. I think I've told you before, but it's worth hearing again. There was a woman who, she was the very first woman ever elected to the House of Commons in Great Britain. Her name was Lady Astor. And it was when Winston Churchill was the prime minister at that time. So they had a lot of political entanglements, a lot of political engagements. And they didn't see eye to eye on most everything political. And not only that, they just rubbed each other the wrong way. It was literally oil and water. He didn't like her. She didn't like him. Well, they're in the House of Commons, and they're debating women's rights. And it was very emotional for her. And Winston was very emotional. And I mean, they really got into it. Well, Churchill was a better debater than she was. And Churchill could always beat her in a debate. So whenever he would beat her, then she would really get angry. She'd just get personal. And so they got into a screaming match. She got so angry. This is in front of the whole House of Commons. They got so angry. She said, Sir Winston, if I were your wife, I'd poison your coffee. He never missed a beat. He said, if you were my wife, I'd gladly drink it. Now, she had murder in her heart. He had suicide in his, but she had murder in her heart. She murdered him. No, not literally, but yes, she did. Intense anger, Jesus said, that's murder. I'll tell you something else. Jesus said, now watch this, insulting anger. He said, that's murder. He said, again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, is answerable to the court. Now, that word raka doesn't really have an English a translation or equivalent, but it comes from a word that means empty. So let me give you an illustration. Have you ever gotten so angry that you called somebody an airhead or an idiot or a numbskull or a dummy? I think the only one you've never called me, Teresa, is a numbskull, if I remember. But you say, well, what's the big deal? Why is that murder? I'll tell you why. Because we're all made in the image of God. Absolutely. And God thinks we're all valuable. Exactly. And whatever God makes is not an idiot or an airhead or a blockhead. And God and Jesus said, when you are so angry that you call somebody by those names, he said, you're a murderer. Intense anger. Insulting anger. I'll tell you something else, he said, insensitive anger. He said, that's murder. He goes on to say this, and anyone who says you fool will be in danger of the fire of hell. Do you know what the Greek word is for fool? It's the word moros. Where do you think we get the word? What word do you think we get? Moron. Hey, be honest. You ever said to somebody, what a moron? Jesus said, you just called somebody I love, somebody I created, a useless, wasteless, wasted person. We call it character assassination. Jesus said, when you get so angry, you've got to revert to name calling. You've got to degrade people. You've got to cut them down. You say they have no value. You're guilty of murder. Now, again, legally, you're in the clear, legally. But spiritually and morally, in God's eyes, he says it's murder. It's not attempted murder. It is actual murder. Because when you're at the point you want to kill somebody, you may say, well, now, wait a minute. I don't want to kill anybody. Now, I wouldn't mind if somebody else killed them. I don't want to kill anybody, but I wish they'd choke on a varsity hot dog. I don't want to kill anybody, but if they have a heart attack, I can't help it. Jesus said, you're guilty of murder. So when people talk about the Ten Commandments, they'll always go to this one. Well, I'll tell you what I've never broken, murder. Yes, we have. Jesus said, we must internally seek the cause of the problem. Now, if that was not enough to shake everybody up, if that was not enough to get everybody's attention, Jesus tightens the screws. He said, not only must we internally seek the cause of the problem, Jesus said we must intentionally seek the cure for the problem. Now, Jesus does what every great preacher does. He was the greatest preacher to ever live. He says, you know what? I'm going to apply this message in a practical way. Let me bring this home to where you live every day. Let me give you a practical example. So listen to what he says. You talk about mind-boggling. He said, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, in other words, you're in church, you come to church. If you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, he said, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Now, if you're a Jewish person, you sat straight up. You got wide-eyed. Because to a Jewish person, there was no more important place than the temple. And in the temple, there was no more important thing than the altar. And at the altar, there was no more action important, more important than giving your offering at the altar. And what Jesus is saying is this. You ready for this? Jesus said, I don't care if you did come to church to worship. There's something more important than your worship. As a matter of fact, until this happens, you can't worship. Until you do this, your worship is impossible. He says, you cannot get to God vertically until you get right with your brother horizontally. It's one of the very few times in the Bible we're told there's something more important than worship. So let me meddle just a minute where some of you are, some of you watching right now. I'm touching a nerve, I know I am. So let's just get it out. You wonder why you come to church most every Sunday, but you just don't get much out of it. You don't get much out of the sermon. You try to sing the songs, but nothing moves you. You walk out the same way that you walked in. For some of you, just coming to church is just a chore. It's just something you check off. And you wonder, why don't I get more out of it? What is the problem? I don't know why it's true for some of you. I'll tell you why it is true, though, for some of you. The reason why some of you come to worship, but you never worship, even though you never miss a worship service, is for this reason. You cannot be right with the God you can't see if you're not right with the brother or the sister that you can see. Yes. So let me just be very, very frank and very, very honest. You say, but you don't know. You've never had your husband walk out on you and leave you with two kids. No, I haven't, or a wife either, obviously. Yeah, you don't know what it's like to be fired from a job after 25 years of service because the church, the company downsized and didn't even give you a cup as you left. No, I don't know that. You don't know what it's like to be raised by a dad or a mom that always loved the other brother or the other sister more than me. Yeah, I didn't have that. I don't know. And I'm not making light of it. What I am telling you is this. If you don't get that right and you don't make that right, you'll never be right with God. And if you don't make that right, you'll never be able to worship God. I want to tell you something. one of the things I love about reading the Bible, we're going to encourage you to read the Bible through this year, at least the New Testament. One of the things I love, I tell you, is I see things I've never seen before. I'm working on this sermon, and I saw something. I've read this verse. I'll be conservative. I know I've read this verse conservatively 300 times in my life. I never saw this until I worked on this message. Paul was talking about worship and talking about lifting hands in worship, which we all read. It's a good thing. But I want you to listen to what Paul said. I've never seen this before. Paul said in 1 Timothy 2:8, therefore, I want the men everywhere to pray. Well, we all ought to pray. He says, lift up holy hands. Yeah, I got that. But then he said, I've never seen this before, without, what's that word?
Anger.
Same word Jesus used, by the way. I've never seen that before. You know what Paul was saying? You can't pray with an angry heart. You can't worship God with a bitter spirit. You can't come to God with one hand saying, I love you, but with a closed fist to your brother saying, I hate you. You can't do that. It is an impossibility. You can't be right vertically if you're not right horizontally. Jesus said, if you're not right with someone on earth, you can't be right with God in heaven. That's why he says, you know what you ought to do? And you know what? I'm not going to ask you to do it today necessarily. But I guarantee you there's somebody in this room that probably ought to get up right now, walk out that door, and make it right with somebody. That's why you come in here and it's like your prayers hit the ceiling and your worship hit the ceilings and it never goes anywhere at all. In fact, let me give you a scenario. You get up on Sunday morning, you take a shower, you put on your clothes, you come to church, you park your car, you walk inside, you sit down, then we start singing, you stand up. Some of you maybe lift your hands, you get ready to listen to the truth of the Word of God, you get out your notepad. But in your heart, there's this unresolved anger. In your heart, there's this person that comes to your mind. In your heart, it's that husband that walked out. It's the boss that fired you. It's the dad that never did love you. In your heart, it's either somebody you offended or somebody who's offended you. It's on the screensaver of your soul, and you just can't forget it. You just can't get beyond it. You just can't get over it. You know what happens? You walked in the door, but your worship walked out. Because you can come into a building and still not worship. You can bring a Bible and still not worship. You can raise your hands and still not worship if there's unresolved anger in your heart. But Teresa and I have been married, this March will be 48 years. I'm more in love with this woman today than the day I sent her a text today, told her how grateful I am. I'm so thankful for my wife. I really am. I don't know. If I were her and she were me, I wouldn't live with her, okay? But she does, and I'm grateful for it. But I'm telling you the truth. We kind of had an agreement. We got married, and there were several things we had to, you know, make sure that we all agreed on. We worked out. And because I told her, I said, look, I'm going to be a pastor, you know, and just some things that we just got to have to understand. And I said, now, so we have a rule. We don't fight on Saturday night. Now, Sunday night, it's game on. But we don't fight on Saturday night. You want to take a guess why we don't fight on Saturday night? I got to preach Sunday morning. I can't get up here and preach if she's mad at me or I'm mad at her. I can't get up and preach if there's unresolved anger with us. Because if I'm going to be right with the God of the Word, I can't be right with God if I'm wrong with my wife. I can't do it. And incidentally, Jesus is specifically speaking to someone. Listen to what he says. He says, I'm not talking about a situation where you've got something against somebody. I'm talking about a situation where you might though or think that somebody's got something against you. You come to church and you know this brother is offended. This sister is offended. They are hurt with me. Now, watch this. You may not have done anything wrong. You may have not done anything deserving of them being upset with you. Jesus said, doesn't matter. If you've got something against someone or they got something against you, you stop. Put your Bible down, put your offering up, go walk out of the church, and you go make things right, and then you come back. Because either way, whether you're offended or the offender, it's what you got to do. Now, let me just say one thing. This is important. I'm going to move on. Suppose somebody's done you wrong. But they either don't think they've done you wrong, or even if they think they've done you wrong, they are not going to ask you for forgiveness. You forgive them anyway. Can I tell you why? Because it frees you. Because as long as you don't forgive them, they got you in your own prison. Let's turn it around. You've done something wrong against someone else, and you go to them and you ask them to forgive you. But they're so angry, they're so mad, they hate you so much, they refuse to forgive you. You do it anyway. Why? Because it frees you. Yes, there are going to be times. There are absolutely going to be times. You're going to express forgiveness without receiving repentance. There are going to be times you're going to express repentance without even receiving forgiveness. But either way, you can go to bed at night and know, I did my best to seek the cure for the problem. I did all that I could to be reconciled. Because remember, you cannot be right with a father that's above you if you're not right with a brother that's beside you. So Jesus said, first of all, we've got to internally seek the cause of the problem. It's the heart. Secondly, we've got to intentionally seek the cure for the problem. We've got to go and make things right. Whether we're the offender or the offended, doesn't matter. We've got to take the initiative. We got to make it right. There's some of you that need to leave this church today. Today, you need to make that phone call. You need to make that visit. You need to write that letter. You need to make that email. And you need to say, hey, I want to work things out. Let's make things right. And then there's one last thing. Now, let me stop. Can I just ask a question? Is that different or what? Is that different? Well, Jesus says one last thing. We must immediately settle the conflict of the problem. Now, Jesus, again, he's going to tighten the screws one more time. Because here's what some of you are going to say. Here's what some of you are saying. I know what you're saying. Yeah, Pastor, I know you're right. I'll get around to it one day. No, you won't. Yeah, I've been meaning to do it. I know you're right. I just gonna have to work on myself. No. Jesus said, not only should you get right with somebody intentionally, he said you do it immediately. Because here's what he said. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taking you to court. Do it while you're still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison until you have paid the last penny. He says, truly I tell you, you'll not get out until you have paid the last penny. Here's what Jesus told about. This is so simple. He says, look, you make things right with everyone you can before it's too late. And here's what he's talking about. Back in Bible days, if you were owed a debt, you couldn't pay it. They just threw you in jail. In fact, we used to have, back when we first started this country, we had what was called debtor's prison. And if you owed a debt and you couldn't pay it, you went to prison. The problem is it became a catch-22. Because there was no time limit on your punishment, the only way you could get out would be to pay off your debt. But if you're in jail, you can't work. If you can't work, you can't pay off your debt. So in effect, you were given a life sentence. That's what Jesus is talking about. And that's why Jesus says, look, settle things quickly, quietly, before it gets to court, before you stand before God, because Roman law said that a plaintiff could bring an accused person before a judge. But Roman law also said this, and any time before you walk before that judge, you can make things right. And any time before you stand before that judge, the two of you can come to an agreement. You can settle your case. But the moment you step across the threshold of that courtroom, the moment you stand before the judge, your fate is too late. So I just want to see where you are spiritually. I went to bed last night, as all of us did. I went to bed the same way I've gone to bed since I was 9 years old. I went to bed knowing that if I woke up in heaven and not on earth, I knew I'd wake up in heaven. How do you know that? Because when I was 9 years old, I settled my case with God out of court. I confessed my sin to Jesus. I accepted his death on the cross, his resurrection, his payment for my sin, and I surrendered my life to him, and Jesus canceled my sin debt. Totally free, done and clear. So that's what Jesus is saying to us. Number one, you better make sure you settle things with God before it's too late. But you better make sure you settle things with others before it's too late. You know, people ask me from time to time, and I guess more because I'm, you know, getting older. They'll say, how do you think you're going to die? And I guess we all think that when you go, you know, how are you going to die? How's it going to be? And I know what they mean by that when they ask me that question, but I don't answer it the way they think I'm going to answer it. They'll say, how do you think you're going to die? And I'll always say to them, oh, I know exactly how I want to die. Why do you want to die? You know what I always tell them? I want to die right. What do you mean? I want to die right with God. I want to die right with others. I want to die knowing there's nothing between you and me. And I want to die knowing there's nothing between you and me. I want to know that I've done everything I can to be right with God and everything I can to be right with others. Now, I've already settled that with Jesus. I told you about that. But I can stand before you right now and tell you, as far as I know, I have nothing against anyone and nobody has anything against me. As far as I know, if I knew of something, I'd make it right. If I knew something, I'd be intentional. I would take the first time and say, okay, I got to make this right. Because you know what I have found? It is incredible that when you either forgive someone or you seek forgiveness from someone, it's incredible how you unload the gun in their hand. It's amazing how you take the bullets out of their chamber. So I'm going to tell you this story and we'll be done. You'll love it. It's a great story. Some say it's a legend. I kind of happen to believe it could be true. We've all seen that beautiful portrait of the Lord's Supper. We've all seen that portrait. I think we have one in our home. It was painted by Leonardo da Vinci, but you don't know the story behind that painting. Da Vinci had got into this intense, bitter argument with a fellow painter. Don't know what it was about, but I mean, it was a royal battle. And they wound up just absolutely hating each other. Well, Da Vinci began to think, how can I get back at this guy? How can I trump him? How can I really let him know just how much I hate him? And he came up with this devious plan. Everybody knew around town that Da Vinci was working on the Lord's Supper. So here's what he decided. When he came to Judas Iscariot, he said, I'm going to paint the face of that guy on Judas. I'm going to paint, he'd put his face there. And he did. He painted the guy's face on Judas Iscariot. He then let everybody around town know, hey, come see my painting. And so when they came, he would always say, by the way, Judas, and he told them, here's where he'll be. He'll be the third guy on the left. When they would look, they would just gasp. They'd say, oh, that's, they knew it was. Everybody, he was the talk of the town. Everybody was talking about how he was Judas Iscariot. Boy, it made Leonardo feel so good. He'd go to bed at night and he'd think, man, I nailed this guy. He'd go to bed at night thinking, that guy won't ever mess with Leonardo da Vinci anymore. But then the day came and he had saved one face for last. And that was the face of Jesus. His mind went totally blank. He could not get any vision at all of what Jesus ought to look like. Lips, ears, eyes, nose, forehead, hair, face, nothing came to him. He had a complete writer's block. Couldn't figure it out. He goes to bed one night. He's laying there. And he's thinking about, why can't I paint the face of Jesus? And the Spirit of God spoke to his heart and said, Leonardo, you'll never be able to paint the face of the one who's forgiven you until you forgive the one who's offended you. And God broke Leonardo da Vinci. And the next morning, he said to the Lord, he said, Lord, if you'll let me live, I'm telling you, I forgive this man and I will ask forgiveness. He went to that painting and the first thing he did was he washed the face of that man off the face of Judas. He then went to that man's home and knocked on his door. When the man came to that door, Leonardo simply said, I've come to ask you for forgiveness. I've come to reconcile with you. Would you forgive me? That's all that was said. They embraced. They reconciled. Guess what happened immediately? He came back and perfectly saw the face of Jesus and finished one of the world's greatest portraits. So the next time you see that Lord's Supper painting, remember the story behind the painting. Remember what Jesus said about anger. Because the truth of the matter is, we've all been guilty of the murder in first degree, because you and I literally were guilty of murdering Jesus Christ. The way I got saved, the way I became a Christian, the way God changed my life was I finally understood I'm the one that nailed Jesus. I'm the one that crucified Jesus. I'm the one that killed Jesus. I'm the one that murdered Jesus. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you're looking at a murderer. You are listening to a murderer in the first degree. But I settled my case out of court. Went to the very one that I murdered, who graciously, gladly, lovingly, eternally forgave me. So yes, we've all been guilty of murdering the Lord Jesus Christ who's in heaven, but we've also been guilty of murdering our brothers and sisters on earth. So whether it's the crime of murder or the sin of murder or both, it is because of the murder of the one on the cross we can be forgiven and we can be set free. All you have to do is turn on the news today and you'll quickly realize we're living in a politically divided world. In fact, I don't know that there's ever been a more contentious moment in my lifetime. So what does God's Word have to teach us about living in a time like this? What does it mean to follow Jesus in a divided America? Well, to help you navigate these difficult days with both grace and truth, I have composed a practical resource called Finding Peace in the Political Storm, 5 Biblical Anchors for American Christians. It explores what the Bible teaches about the role of government, the importance of moral character, and how to pray for both our country and our elected officials. You can read this booklet as part of your morning quiet time, or you can study it alongside your church small group. It is designed to give you clarity and courage for the days ahead. The resources are available right now at touchinglives.org. That's touchinglives.org for a gift of any amount. And I hope it will be a blessing to all of you.
Touching the lives of the lost and enriching the faith of the found. This is Touching Lives with Dr. James Merritt.